Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, Stuff of Legend, a new AP series.
Oh, that's right. We only discussed that 3 minutes ago. Why did I somehow like fall out of my brain? We were talking about that. Okay, sorry. Continue. Yes.
And Muppet Born for 5e.
I knew about that previously, but okay.
And Zine Quest 3.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So we'll cover that this week. So I guess
we'll end on a positive with the Zine Quest. Okay.
We'll try. I guess we'll start with a new style of AP, or so a new actual play series started on February 2nd. So they're streaming D&D, and the channel has done it before. They've played D&D on this channel before, but this is a very new style. And the stuff, of the legend of the title, the titular stuff, is referring to puppets.
I didn't put that together.
Yeah, so all of the... and it's unfortunate because there's already a YouTube channel called Stuff of Legend, so it's not easy to find.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, maybe that's a good thing for me.
Yeah. Anyway. But...
can you call them Muppets? Because, like...
I think Muppets is trademarked.
Yeah.
But it's... they are very Muppet-esque.
Yeah.
So I guess they had a studio somewhere. I might have the name... a name in my notes somewhere, but they have a studio that produced puppet versions of the characters and also, you know, the NPCs and the beasties and stuff of the adventure. And so instead of cutting away to animation or instead of cosplay at the table, all of the gameplay action is told through the puppets.
I have not watched this and probably will not, because adult puppets are just really not my thing. I've not found one that has held my attention and hasn't been adult, meaning like crass and...
Right.
But, lost my train of thought. No, okay, what I was wondering, no, gotcha. Is it like, are the puppets on screen the whole time, or is it more like some of the other style of APs where it's players sitting around a virtual table playing a game and then we cut to puppet action?
Yes. Yeah, so all the gameplay, so all the in-game action is the puppets' mouths move following the players' voices, and anything that's kind of shown, and kind of the humor, like whatever kind of jokes they make or whatever, they try to reenact with the puppets.
But so are the players on screen at all?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and it's a little bit, I think they fixed it later on, but I watched the first episode, and it's a little echoey. They're really crammed at this table, and it's a little echoey, the sound. So the production is okay, but they... anything that they do. So they introduce their characters and the characters. So it was funny, though, because some of them introduced first person, so it made sense. And then some of them are like, he is a player. So it was like a little, oh, no, you're, yeah, yeah. So they got to get a hold of their gimmick, I think.
It's into, yeah. I guess, a tangent, which, hey, since we've got to pad out time, this one. Like, prior to playing with this group, I think my preference was largely the in-person.
Yes.
For doing character.
Yeah, and this is in person, and no masks or social distancing, so I don't know when they...
Oh, sorry. When I said in person, I meant first person.
Okay.
First person narration for the character,
is
my preferred style.
Yes,
right. And not until playing with this group did I realize that that's kind of not everybody's preferred style, and like some people are more comfortable saying they, she, he, whatever, when referring to their character's actions and dialogue, rather than saying, like, I do... Or just like speaking as if there were quotes around their character, as opposed to like saying something like he says and then paraphrasing. And it's just kind of something I hadn't really noticed until playing with this group. Yeah. And something they bring it back to Stuff of Legend, something they probably should have discussed prior to filming it or recording it, so that everyone was on the same page and it didn't end up with kind of an odd thing like that.
Yeah, anything I've seen on that channel that they were doing before, they were doing remotely because it was during 2020, so everyone was in front of their web camera. So this was in person, and it's something that looked like a rented castle or something. It didn't look like a green screen. So they had some setting that they were playing this in, and so every Tuesday for 6 weeks, we're going to be seeing that. And
are
we? It's I don't know. Well, we may not see it, but it's available.
Okay.
but it's an interesting, I mean, it makes sense kind of economically, because other actual play series like Harmon Quest, or I think even Adventure Zone, I'm not sure in their episodes, but I know they've been done, there's animation that's been done for that. That's expensive.
And oh, I'm sure,
even
yeah.
The garbage, you know, even this cheap and,
tell us how
and,
you really feel.
And trashy as you can make the animation. Right. Yeah, it's very simple flash stuff. It still takes production time. And just doing puppets in front of a green screen, I think, is much more efficient.
Oh,
and,
possibly.
And they may even, I'm suspecting that they just record their actual play session and then send it off.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, and the you know, the puppets have their stage, and they're like, okay, we need to make a goblin, and we need to make a crate of oranges and whatever.
I'm sure, yeah, yeah.
And so the all the post, the puppets are all post and all done and added in. But it's nice to kind of cut away. That's what I like about the, you know, when they're doing animation, you're not so conscious of the people at the table. But then at the same time, it makes people do character voices and extreme stuff a little bit more because they want to see how that looks animated or they want to maybe see what the puppet does.
Do you think the same thing would happen? Oh, like you said, if it's being kind of translated over to a puppet.
Mm. Yeah, I think, yeah. So it's Joven Shire is the DM. And it was okay. The first session was real standard stuff. And the party consists of Laserkorn, a regular on his channel, Shanna Malcolm, Brandon Rogers, and Lisa Foyez. So it's, they're okay. They don't have great chemistry, and it's okay, but it's...
Well, it's also, I know nothing about the players or the performers, so I don't know if they've run a game together. It might be a case of feeling things out,
yes.
And that chemistry will get better as the series continues.
And they're definitely aiming at Critical Role because it's they even say they're using kind of a simplified rule set. So he does say, you know, roll a d20, I want a stealth check, or he'll say things like that. But it's really stripped down, so there's not too much discussion of rules, and they'll do little pop-ups of technically what they're talking about in the corner.
Do you think this is aimed at people who are kind of learning to play, or is it more Critical Role style, where this is aimed at being entertainment over how to play?
Most of the people in the party never played before.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So the channel has done D&D plays before, but not with these players. And so I think it's a very introduction, very basic beginner thing, because they even say, you know, what is Dungeons and Dragons kind of at the beginning? So, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
puppets, do you think that goes at odds or clashes with the, what we haven't talked about yet, the adult nature of the show? Like, obviously, beginner players are not exclusively a younger audience.
Right.
But I don't think you can ignore the fact that younger players are going to want to learn to play.
Right.
So I don't know who this is marketed to or who it's aimed at, but if it is intended to onboard players to D&D or new players to D&D, I wonder if the adult tone undermines or conflicts with that.
Maybe. And they do a lot of kind of innuendo and kind of sexual jokes. And I think one of the characters is even named Areola Borealis or something. Yeah. So
I know two of the characters. I guess we're getting to the controversy. This was brought to my attention,
yes.
And I said before, I do not care for adult puppet stuff. It's
right.
Just not funny. So I'm not going to watch this. And it being D&D, it's just crap icing on the cake. So no, how this came to my attention was a shot of the characters and a discussion of how I guess it's a dragonborn, because you can't really tell,
yes, right.
Has ginormous puppet boobs.
Right, right.
And kind of what that implied, and the defense that the player of this character requested the proportions of that character, and so that kind of makes it okay, and whether it does or does not.
Mm.
So I knew that the character's name was Areola. One of the other characters' name is Slippy Richardson.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. And you immediately knew what the short name for Richard was going to be, right?
Right.
And reading kind of more, I guess, more than giant puppet boobs, was the fact that I guess this character has a weapon named Assfuck.
Oh.
And as a Kotoa with poisoned skin, their preferred method of attack is to strip naked then gyrate or hump enemies. Right. And
yes, yeah, there was the...
So, this whole thing I don't know.
Yeah.
That kind of makes me... Like I said, it's puppets. It's D&D.
Right.
three strikes, you're out. This sounds like something I just don't want to watch.
Yeah, it's got an odd tone. Yeah, definitely, I think it being so introductory, it could draw in, you know, like 10, 11, 12-year-olds. And that's a big audience for YouTube. I mean, that's
how
most viewers.
It's also puppets. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Let's be honest. Right, whatever you bill it as, just from queuing up stuff for my kid, we've been pretty good about, you know, YouTube not showing random crap. Mm-hmm. But that's not always going to be the case. Mm-hmm. And hey, what's this puppet? And is it a Cookie Monster parody or whatever? And, oh, no, it's not.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not any coarser than like any 70s, you know, television comedy and stuff. So
are you going to let your kid watch that?
So I think it's fine, as far as the content, but yeah, it's not a clear audience. Yeah. I think it's whatever they thought their previous AP audience was, and this is just kind of an upgrade. And also, the puppets get them a lot of attention. I mean, I've seen a lot of press for this because of, and maybe because the studio they're working with probably got some PR involved.
Am I incorrect in thinking that this is some kind of like actual official partner? With WotC and D&D.
Yeah, I think there is sponsorship. I didn't get to the part, any part where they, but in the beginning he kind of says that, and they're playing a Waterdeep, the adventure. So I think it is like specifically like, because he thanked Wizards of the Coast. So it is some sort of sponsorship in that, you know, maybe they made the connection with the studio or something.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what the connection is, but that was part of the other discussion. Mm-hmm. When you have D&D and WotC, like, pulling down from the DM's Guild, like same sex art cover, or kind of like doing the stuff that's not exactly being up on diversity and saying, you know, you can't show nudity or mm-hmm. all the stuff, and doing things that then, if they are partnering or sponsoring this, then sponsoring someone, unless you're kind of like, well, which one is it? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Especially if you're having this character named Slippy Dick with a weapon called Asphalt. Right?
Yes.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's much better. I mean, our sessions are probably not puppet friendly. I don't think we could convert many things we've done to puppets. But
I keep bringing it up. I would be out if someone pops up with a puppet. I just, not that I don't like puppets. Puppets are great. Just...
Yeah, so yeah, it's an odd combination, but you can see people are trying. They're trying to find another hook, and definitely the production of puppets makes sense for an actual play. But I just don't think they chose the right
medium
people to run it. No, this is the group and the people to run it. It's okay, yeah. So I don't think I'm going to make it through six episodes. So
how long are how long is an episode? Like 4 hours? 2 hours?
No. Oh no, it's about an hour. I think. Okay. Yeah. I think so. I kind of jumped around to see like how they were going to portray certain things, because the setup really drug the kind of like the beginning was pretty slow. But yeah, it's an interesting try, and it's, I mean, if WotC's like throwing stuff at the wall to try to see what, you know, what attention they get, and if this is something directly they're sponsoring, which is, you know, which is not Critical Role, I'm sure they're interested in, you know, finding something else that's popular.
Maybe this is them after they kind of lost Critical Role going, anything, you know?
Yes. but maybe I can seduce you into playing puppets if I show you a homebrew rule set for Muppet Born.
Which?
Yes.
I had seen several years ago. So,
so this has been around.
If it's the one I saw before, this has been around for at least 2 or 3 years is not just someone cashing in on the stuff of legend.
Yeah.
If it's the thing I saw before.
Okay. The author is BJ Hypes. Yeah. If you were going to say,
as someone who doesn't really like D&D and doesn't really like adult puppets, I looked at it, said, oh, that's kind of cool. Never going to play it use it for whatever purposes.
Yeah. So they produced, you know, the layout of the pages is very similar to the rule book, so they did a good job of making it look like it came from 5e. And so it's got some funny, you know, racial qualities, species qualities. So fuzzy and warm, and it makes you a proud and silly race. And the Muppet Born traits are your ability scores, constitution and dexterity. But I'm sure if you've got Tasha's, you can manipulate your Muppet however you want. The alignment, size, speed, always obscured. So no matter how you look at them, Muppet Born's bottom halves are always.
This is the one I saw before. And that's the part that I thought was kind of funny.
Right.
Like, yeah.
And the mythology. Brings us to the hand.
Yeah.
Right. So which hand are they? Gives the character. So innately known as the cantrip mage hand. However, the floating hand can only lift up 5 pounds and move you 5 feet per character level. They also have nom nom nom, which means they absorb energy from food without actually swallowing it.
That's funny.
Cloth and color, so they all have a cantrip of mending, which can be used to heal 1d8 hit points.
Of course.
And, so the sub-races, that's right. The Hand are their sub-races. So you have Hand of the Monster, which has extra charisma bonus. Hand of the Grouch, which is a strength bonus. Hand of the Animal, which is a wisdom bonus. So it's a very serious 5e D&D race.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, so I guess, with the terminology, it probably was written before Tasha. Yeah, so yeah, yeah, it's probably been around because it seems like it's based on the original player's handbook.
Yeah, I can't tell you how old it is, but this is the one that I encountered at least a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was funny and kind of clever. And yeah, the layout is kind of that standard template. So it looks like it came right out of the 5e handbook.
Right.
But, and if you want to play, you know what? With everything else that's in D&D 5e, why not?
Right.
You know, why not? Right.
Yes. How actually distracting would it be compared to, the myriad of races that
no one
will
probably notice. Apart from maybe their lower half always being obscured.
Right. Yeah, that was a restriction, going back to the stuff of legend. That was a little bit of a restriction with the puppets, like especially when people are jumping on each other doing things. It's like, puppets do have that limitation because
you should take a page from Sesame Street and then have like the body double that you throw at something.
That's right.
There's a little feet go.
All right. Well, enough of these puppets.
Thank goodness.
So
I had a surprisingly lot to say.
We're in the middle of the month of Zine Quest 3. So this is the third iteration. And so if you don't know what a Zine Quest is, so they're calling it a grassroots challenge similar to a game jam. So it tasks indie game designers with completing and crowdfunding a physical project that runs on Kickstarter for at least 2 weeks. And
I'm pretty sure there's no, like, those are the requirements. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's no like reward for meeting them other than having your stuff funded, right?
Right.
Like it's a challenge to just kind of challenge to see if can do it.
I think the challenge is just maybe you've had something in digital form for a while and you've got some sales and like this would be an opportunity if you already have some fans to say, here's a physical version of it. But there looks like some interesting projects, but I was really surprised by the scale.
Oh, so, it's huge.
Yeah.
It gets huge, yeah.
470 projects on Kickstarter. So do they kind of manage this separately? I mean, can you search just the Zine Quest?
I'm honestly not sure.
Because that would really flood the book section or whatever, game section
of
Kickstarter.
I can't say. Like, I've been trying to stay off Kickstarter because I spend so much money on Itch. But usually the way I find out about Kickstarter projects is just from people I follow.
Their Twitter and
tweeting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Either there or another person's product. So I have not browsed a section of Kickstarter in a long time.
Okay.
I do not believe, maybe there is. Maybe there's a Zine Quest 3 like category that you can quickly browse the stuff. But yeah, it gets massive.
Yeah. So what do you think? I mean, is this a good thing? Because this is just something that using any platform, any crowdfunding platform, a game designer could do. Is Kickstarter doing a good thing by sponsoring this? They're just, they're getting their cut.
Right.
They're not doing this out of the goodness of their hearts, but...
I kind of have, not necessarily mixed feelings. I generally think it's positive. There are a few... I think the goal of Zine Quest is what you said, to kind of get people who maybe wouldn't normally do it or have a product in a digital format to go, I could turn this into a limited run physical copy.
Right.
Kickstarter has some limitations. There's a number of countries that you cannot have a Kickstarter account and you cannot be a creator.
Mm-hmm.
So people in those countries, and I couldn't tell you which ones they are locked out of doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen a couple people and other kind of Kickstarter, not Kickstarter companies, but other companies who have done Kickstarter saying, if you are in one of those countries, contact us and let's work something out to get your zine into Zine Quest through, kind of individual, I guess, not deals, but you'll hash out the details there. The other thing I saw, as someone who has considered doing a Kickstarter for Zine Quest, shipping is not something I want to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out recently through, I think, some article, don't do physical stuff. Do not charge for physical shipping through Kickstarter.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Because, and I might be getting the specifics wrong, this person went through and said, Kickstarter counts any yes. money included as for shipping right. towards your total.
Yeah, yeah. And they take a piece of that. Yeah.
And they yeah. not only they take a piece of that, mm-hmm. but that if it's included towards your total, mm-hmm. you made your goal. But how much of the money you raised then has to be spent on shipping, which actually doesn't go to producing the thing you were going to
right,
produce.
Right.
And this person said it's much better to physically fulfill something through your own web store or to set up a Gumroad account mm-hmm. and only charge on Kickstarter for the production,
right.
then do fulfillment and shipping as like an extra add-on through Gumroad or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
And if I'm ever going to do one, that's what I'm going to do because shipping out of Japan is astronomical.
Yeah, I think you would definitely have to use a fulfillment service yeah. and just print and ship to, you know, send from the printer to them and then have them fulfill, especially if most of your customers are English-speaking
yeah, yeah,
countries.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah
like
that's
like
sense. Yeah.
Me looking at producing physical stuff, I would probably have to like send it somewhere out of Japan to be printed, which means ship it to me to check that stuff, then ship right. it back out to the people who, and nobody wants to do that. Or rather, I don't want to do that, which is why I've not made anything physical.
Yeah.
Or if I did, it would be a, here's your code to download the print on demand from DriveThruRPG or DriveThruCards or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So that makes sense too, because you want to, you know, your funding amount should be a true measure of like how much you have to spend on production, not how much you actually have to spend on shipping.
Production and then shipping. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's crazy. So have you, in the previous Zine Quest, have you purchased any? Have you backed anything?
I think I couldn't tell you what it was, but I've backed a couple things. I think not in this round of Zine Quest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe those. There are a couple that I'm looking at or seem interesting, but I think I backed a couple from the first or second one. I couldn't tell you what they are though.
Mm-hmm. But, that's yeah. cool. So let's, I guess, talk a little bit about like just the phenomena or the trend of zines
in
RPG.
Couple, I wasn't expecting this topic, but I got a couple like right here, the one page little zine things.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think that they've, I mean, zines are very kind of have a very old kind of more like punk rock DIY yep. history. And so how do you think they became an RPG format and how do you think, because it's pretty recent and
it's fairly recent. Yeah.
And like the production value. So it's not as much of a, you know, Xerox and stapled thing. There's some really gorgeous,
oh, yeah.
Well-produced and well-designed.
I couldn't tell you what started it, but I think it's just being able to self-publish and kind of the rise of print on demand
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Making it more accessible for people
right.
to do. And as much as I like slickly produced, you know, little books,
mm-hmm.
I think there's kind of something aesthetically pleasing about the stuff that looks more like the do-it-yourself
oh, yeah. oh,
Xeroxed mm-hmm. to the point where I've downloaded a couple like asset packs to replicate nice. That style because if right, I did right. anything by hand, no one would be able to read it.
Ah, right, right. But, nice. So do you think, is it ever style over substance though? Or is it ever like the object over like the actual rule set or you know, setting or, you know?
I think, good question. And I guess as a tangent, I was just looking at the Degenesis Rebirth Edition,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't realize is provided as PDF completely free, like a 700 page.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
Gorgeously and slickly produced PDF.
Mm-hmm.
And then the physical object is this gorgeous, like black matte gold edged book.
That, right.
Like, it's absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it and said, oh, I might actually kind of consider getting it, but that is definitely on the characteristics of it being an object.
Yes.
Like, this is a beautiful right. object. I know nothing about the rule set,
mm-hmm.
but I'm willing to buy this just for the art object.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The rules are kind of not secondary, but a bonus. That might be the case with some of the zines. Like, some people might want to get a zine or a little book because this looks awesome.
Right.
And
right.
it's fairly cheap to produce. I guess one of the other benefits of zines is the substance over style,
mm-hmm.
where like it kind of doesn't matter what this looks like. It's this hand scrolled out thing, but the game inside it is really good, or you really enjoyed it, or whatever.
Right, right.
And it's easy to produce. It didn't cost that much for the person to make it.
Yeah.
Easily distributable. And one of the other benefits of the zine is if it gets destroyed, you kind of don't care because you just print out another double-sided
right.
copy and fold it up.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I was really surprised by that. I'm trying to, and was thinking, so I think you're right, like print on demand has a lot to do with that. And maybe people that would have gone into like indie comics or something, you know, actually loved gaming more. And so if they have like, you know, design degrees or illustrators or whatever, they end up, instead of going in doing comic projects or art books or whatever, they are funneled into the kind of game, you know, like a more art game kind of things. Because it seems like they trend a little bit more towards, you know, art games. A lot of the zines are...
Well, possibly. And I think there's like a difference between like that one page, like fold up zine that makes a little 8-page booklet and kind of the more professionally produced, like, you know, stapled things where I think those stapled books can be anything. But again, the focus is a bit on ease of production.
Right.
So, yeah.
Nice. Well, good. Yeah. So take a look at that. Yeah. So all through the month of February on Kickstarter, you can look at 470 examples of, and I think that is the total. Yeah. That there's a lot of projects right now, but it looks like some good stuff. I mean, it just may be hard to, unless you know a name or there's a creator you're specifically looking for or a game that you want to buy a physical copy of.
Or maybe you're just going through, because I couldn't tell you what the split is. Mm-hmm. I'm sure some of them are add-ons for existing games.
Right.
Some of them are their own little game, as opposed to being like part of another system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's good. Yeah. So zines. So, well, what is on the table as far as zines? What did you bring?
Oh, I brought something. The Sledgehammer zines by John Geary.
Ah.
And they're just one-page little things. And it's rules light, grim dark fantasy.
Oh, nice.
So imagine the Warhammer fantasy stuff, because your four stats are weapon skill, initiative, toughness, and fellowship. And you have a little corruption clock that you fill in, and when it gets all the way to the end, you're just dead. And it's this really rules light, roll under on D100, and you basically roll a bunch of random tables to generate your character. And of course, one of your professions may be a rat catcher, and you may have a mean little dog with you, you know, that kind of thing. And I just liked... It looks hand-drawn and hand-lettered and all that stuff. And it's one of the zines that I just said. In addition to this looking like a cool game, I also just like the style of how it's written up. Mm. And it kind of... It's not outsider art.
Right.
But it's kind of along that line where I think zines are something that anybody and everybody could make.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it kind of harkens back to, I'm sure you did it when you were a kid as well, kind of like hand-drawing little Super Mario, your extra little Super Mario maps on like 8.5 by 11 paper or making this game and not caring what the production looked like, but also kind of the game being more important than the presentation. And I'm not saying the presentation there is crap. It's an aesthetic that I like.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Nice. Nice. Well, we also have a kind of a double feature of Joseph McCullough's books.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, so you can see this as opposed to last week where I
we couldn't see it. It was on the table last week.
Yes. But I ruled stock footage. We had a little technical difficulty with the camera.
Stock footage was hilarious.
Yeah. The pillow fights do break out quite often when we're recording. But the second edition of Frostgrave is out. That came out last year. And we did some Lego. We had some nice Lego sessions of that. But I think we're going to move actually into 28mm minis because you have some wizards.
$120 worth of North Star miniatures.
All right.
Hopefully arriving sometime soon.
Excellent. Yeah.
When I say $120, I also got the book as well.
Oh, nice. Nice. So, yeah, that's just the – and they did a nice job of – The thing I was impressed with is the second edition of Frostgrave is compatible, maybe with some little adjustments, of everything they produced for the first edition.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not just, we want you to buy those books again, or you know, ignore that. This is the new hotness. So yeah.
I think I read the front page, and there's a why second edition thing, and I think the author did a really good job and a really honest job of saying, Frostgrave was the first miniatures game I ever wrote, and over the 5 years or however long years it's been since its release, I learned a bunch of things and clean it up. And second edition is me wanting to try and present the best game possible and incorporate those and update those rule changes from first edition rather than it being I want more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which you wouldn't say anyway, but it came off as being true rather than kind of some slick marketing stuff.
Yeah. And I think Osprey has a couple of games that they've done a good job, or they've just found I don't know if it's the setting or the rule set or whatever, but people have like created a nice community around them. And Frostgrave is one of those, and I think also Gaslands is the other one. So it's especially because it's like, you know, modifying Hot Wheels cars.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that aesthetic really appeals to people. And maybe it's also the miniature agnostic kind of like
maybe.
You know, free use of whatever kind of minis you have that connects people to them, because like I can finally dig out those, you know, old fantasy miniatures or
Hammer.
Yeah, it gets you connected to it. And the other book is the, I think now out of print, but the deluxe edition that Modiphius did of the Rangers of Shadowdeep.
So I think you can also use figures for.
Yes, yeah. So there, I think there are official figures, but you can also, you can use whichever miniatures you want.
Right.
But you're going to have to come up with a bit more. You're going to need some terrain,
okay.
Some giant spiders, some trees. You know, there'll be like, some specific things that they'll ask you to do, you know, for the scenario. So this is more of a narrative game, but it is also cooperative or solo. So this got a lot more attention, I think, over the lockdown kind of pandemic time, because which we're still in. Because it was playable by yourself, and you could kind of go through this. You go through this with your characters and follow a story. So basically, half of this rule book is something that you're not going to get to until you're ready to play. So, you know, you don't want to spoil. You don't want to spoil anything for yourself. But the rule set is nice and very reminiscent of Frostgrave. It's got a lot of aspects of the Frostgrave rule set. So yeah, cooperative or solo miniature gaming. That's a very much newer. But so that's what's on the table, and hopefully we'll be playing some of this.
Speaking of solo games, I also have the, I think, excellent print and play solo game, Escape from Station 52 by Emmanuel Mello.
Mm.
It's available in both Portuguese and English.
Oh, nice.
And I've been playing this a lot.
Yeah.
And it's just like it's a roguelike, which I still don't exactly know the definition of,
right.
Solo card game where you are portraying a character trying to escape from a hostile space station.
Mm.
It's geared where you lose a lot more than you win.
Oh,
but
cool.
It's a very simple set of main rules with emergent complexity of how the fairly minimal rules on each card interact with each other.
Oh, cool.
I really like it. It's $3.
Wow, yeah.
Print and play, available in both Portuguese and English, and I think it is well worth picking up.
Nice. Yeah, we'll put a link to that, definitely, so people can take a look. Wow, very cool. Yeah. All right, so where can people find you?
On Fill Out My Brain. On Twitter, as always.
Yes.
Where I think I was most recently saying that people who don't want to play with safety and consent tools in TTRPGs are people you shouldn't play with.
Oh.
Which, of course, got some pushback, but yeah. How about you?
Nice. So I do a single panel gag cartoon weekly on YouTube and Twitch, abusecartoons.com is where you can find that. And I also do some short audio stories. Yeah,
yes.
So Enmity Stories on YouTube and also on any podcast service. And you can go to Enmity Corp, NMITYCORP.com for the home of those stories.
I haven't been able to listen to one yet, only because I've been having to do a lot of writing at work, and I can't listen to words and write at the same time, unless I want to transcribe the story.
Yes.
And I don't think beginning English students would get much out of an Enmity story.
Right. Yeah, so that is all for us this week. Yeah. So we will be back next week. And if you want to support us on the weekly, please visit patreon.com/idleredhands and become a weekling. That's the support level. The support level for the weekly show. And we'll see you next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye.